Welcome everyone to The Score Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Boone, the lead fantasy analyst at The Score. Appreciate you spending some of your day with us here. I think you're going to be happy that you did. We're doing two shows this week. We got two of my favorite guests lined up, and I'm not going to spoil Thursday's guest yet, but today it's our old buddy Jordan McNamara, one of the best dynasty minds in the business, joining us. And I always recommend that people check out his Analytics of Dynasty work. You can find that at analyticsofdynasty.com. Really smart, insightful stuff that he's doing over there. You can also listen to him on the Dynasty Think Tank podcast with Chad Parsons. You could find him on Twitter at McNamara Dynasty. So a lot of ways to get to his content, but today we got him with us. So Jordan, welcome back to the show, man. There's really a lot of things that I want to go over with you today. We'll talk about some of the intriguing dynasty questions around the Super Bowl teams. I want to get your thoughts on Justin Fields, since it seems like the Bears are going to trade him before next season. And then for the grand finale of the show, we're going to do something that we did a couple years ago when we had you on. We're just going to do maybe a smaller version of it this time. We're going to run through some of the players that we're trying to acquire in dynasty leagues right now. But I remember that we had you on during the season at one point, and we talked about things and mistakes that dynasty managers make in season. And, you know, at that point in the calendar, the mindset can be a little different. People are trying to compete for titles. People might get a little too crazy with rebuilds and all that sort of stuff. So with that in mind, let's switch it to this time of year. What's a mistake that you see dynasty managers make, you know, as we head into the offseason? Is there something that you notice that people do that you might want to warn them against?
There's two things that I think people do this time of year that does them a disservice. Number one, people will say, I'm not contending. Right? It's a year from now. Like, we're talking about 10, it's literally, fantasy playoffs are going to be beginning 10 months from now. You have no idea what's going to happen between now and then. If you want some examples of what I'm talking about, if you would have never, at this point when we discussed last year, you would have never foreseen Kyren Williams being the impact player that he was. Like, that would have not been on your radar. You would have not seen Rashad White be running back 4, Raheem Mostert be running back 5. Right? All of these guys came out of not necessarily nowhere, but of unexpected places. And one or two of those things hits your roster, your team is vastly different, right? And so if you're making decisions through the offseason that are, I'm not going to contend, and you're kind of giving away that win probability this year, you can't maximize, you know, getting things like that right. And so that's the biggest thing I would say. When people say I'm not contending, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. The other thing I think that people spend too much time this time of year doing is studying rookies. A lot of research has shown that, you know, we don't get that like, if you look at Dynasty ADP, for example, you would expect in an efficient marketplace that number would get better over time. It would get more predictive. It would be all the energy, all the work that people do in the marketplace, all these dynasty ideas that are out there, that would get more efficient over time, and it has not. And so that's led me to the conclusion, I think people spend too much time doing that work where there's real opportunities to, you know, study the impacts of free agency, study the impacts of different coaching changes. For example, last year, everyone just thought that Dallas was going to run the ball more because they got rid of Kellen Moore and brought in Mike McCarthy. And if you had actually spent some of the time that you were looking at the rookies and actually studied Mike McCarthy, you would have known that that was not true. And so I just think there's a lot of things like that that people don't focus on that are real low-hanging fruit edges that people kind of give up this time of year.
Yeah, I think those are both really smart. The rookie thing, I've kind of followed suit with you. Like, I try to catch up in January, February, start to go over it all. But I make sure that I don't solidify my opinions on those guys until we get to the draft, until we get that draft capital. You have to know how the NFL is valuing these players. If you get too confident about your own takes, and I've been guilty of it before, you get too confident. And then when the player gets drafted lower or higher than you think, and you just want to dismiss that and go, well, no, I've done all this work for months and I know that this player is going to be X, Y, or Z. And it's just foolish to do that too much. Sometimes you can kind of pound the table for a guy, but overall, I've tried to make sure that I'm not solidifying my thoughts on those guys until we get a little closer to the draft and until we get that extra piece of information, that extra data point. You can take that into all summer where we get to talk about those guys as well. But I want to talk about the Super Bowl teams here. I think we have to, right? It's the last game we have left for a while. So for the 49ers, they're just loaded with fantasy stars at the skill positions. You know, we're still hearing that debate about Brock Purdy, though. And for fantasy, the guy's been good, right? He finished as the QB 8 in fantasy points per game this year. Last season, he was a borderline QB 1, 2. You know, when he was starting from week 13 on, he steps right in and he starts to produce. It just seems like people don't want to trust him. So I want to know, what is Jordan McNamara? What are the analytics of Dynasty? What do you think about Mr. Irrelevant here? What's your Dynasty outlook for him?
Yeah, it's interesting because he's, in a lot of ways, the absolute opposite of Trevor Lawrence. Obviously, Lawrence was picked first. Brock Purdy was picked last. That's, you know, as opposite as you can get and still be drafted. But one of the things that's been really curious with Purdy is he's a touchdown scorer. And score a lot of touchdowns, where you have guys that are more prototypical, that are higher pedigree, that don't score touchdowns at the same level. And so that's one of the things that I can't wrap my mind around when I look at Trevor Lawrence, like, why can't he put the ball in the end zone? And you look at Brock Purdy and you would think, like, the two of those guys, clearly, you know, Lawrence would be the more effective quarterback just by looking at them, but it just hasn't been the case. So I keep kind of coming back to Purdy and thinking, okay, it strikes me there's not a huge sample of day three quarterbacks that have been successful, right? Guys that have been drafted in the fourth through seventh round of the NFL draft on day three. It's not a huge sample of that, but when you look at them, the guys that have succeeded, by and large, unless your name is Kirk Cousins, by and large, you've been effective early on in your career. It's a lot of times it has been with good, you've been plunked into good offenses and you've capitalized on that. It's very similar to what Dak Prescott did. And then you ultimately, you know, you get kind of entrenched there and it's hard for a team to move on from you. So while we might have concerns about a guy like Brock Purdy and some of the physical attributes and those sorts of things, people are going to kind of point that as a system guy or whatever. It's really hard to move on from him once you sort of get in that job and get entrenched in there, because at any given time, there's only really like 25 quarterbacks walking the face of the earth that you feel at the most, that are real starting quarterbacks in the NFL. So there's always a shortage. So it's not like there's a huge supply of guys that are going to come in and just take Brock Purdy's job. That's kind of the one thing that I look at with him. I've thought, if he fell on his face, is there an outside chance that they'd be interested in a guy like Kirk Cousins? Like, that wouldn't be the most surprising thing that happened, right? I wouldn't be stunned by that. But I think he's played well enough that that's probably not going to happen. And the other thing I look at with him is they just did this. Right. They just had a quarterback who, we said the same things about Garoppolo, and very similar tones about Garoppolo. He's limited, he's got these limitations and whatnot. They went and they said, you know what, that's not good enough. Let's try and get Trey Lance. And they mortgaged the future for Trey Lance. And fortunately, they fell into Brock Purdy, right? They had an escape hatch there that they didn't intend to have. Fortunately, they fell into that. And it has worked out really well, another Super Bowl appearance for them. And we'll see how this game plays out. But I look at them and I'm like, are they really going to want to go back to the well of trying to get someone that's better than Brock Purdy? I don't see it. So all that is to say, like, I think Brock Purdy is going to be a multi-year starter in San Francisco and a pretty good offense with Shanahan as his head coach, right? And again, what happens 4, 5, 6 years from now, I'm not totally sure, but in the next couple year window, I feel pretty good about where he's at.
All right. And then the other thing I was thinking about for the Super Bowl teams is the tight ends. You know, you have two of the best that have ever done it. You get Travis Kelce, George Kittle. They're friends off the field. They're outstanding players on it. But Travis Kelce, he's going to be 35 this year. You know, he could have a great media career ahead of him when he retires. Is he going to keep playing till the wheels fall off? Could we see him actually call it quit soon? And then with Kittle, a little bit younger, but he's going to be 31 in the fall. And he plays that really physical style. It often results in injuries for him, so he tends to get banged up throughout the season, and normally he plays through it, but we've seen him get hurt and miss some time as well. And Kittle, I mean, he has one of the highest ceilings of any tight end out there in fantasy, but I want to know, what's your approach with these guys? You know, now that they're into their 30s, you know, these star tight ends, when they get up there, should people be hanging on here, and should they hope that these guys are going to continue to produce like Tony Gonzalez and Jason Witten and some of those guys did when they had long careers? Or is it time to sell off and try to maximize that value and maybe get in on one of the young tight ends and that movement that's been happening over the last couple of years?
It's a great question. The concern that I have with Kelce, you put it right? The concern about these tight ends generally is not, are they going to fall off and be completely unproductive, right? The Witten examples, the Tony Gonzalez examples, Antonio Gates, these guys who are all-timers at tight end that continue to play into their mid to late 30s, all are generally, as long as they have a starting job, they're generally productive, right? So that's, I think, the initial thing to say. So, you know, is Kelce going to be, you know, are we going to get 2020 Kelce again? Probably not. This year has been a decline. I think it's been a little bit overstated, but it has been a decline. I don't know, like, if he wins this game, does he go out on top? I've never won a championship. I've never been arguably the best tight end that's ever played. I've never experienced those things. But I would imagine that it's a pretty big rush to say, listen, I can go out, you know, I can go out like Elway and win my last game and have a ring and do those things. And like you said, he can do whatever he wants after he retires, right? So part of me wonders that. And so if I was in a startup draft right now, I would probably not take him at, you know, tight end 4, 5, 6. I'd probably wait a few weeks to see how the dust settles on that. That would be kind of my advice. But if he comes back and plays, you know, I play in a lot of 2 PPR leagues where you get a good premium for tight ends. Like, he's a big time difference maker. And, you know, there's only really been, depending on your scoring, there's really only 2 or 3 active tight ends that have finished as tight end 1. It's a really, really hard bet. It's a really, really hard accomplishment to get to. And he would still be in the short list of guys that could do it next year. So I think he's a big-time difference maker. Kittle is a little bit different for me. Like, I would argue, and I'm with you in terms of high ceiling, like, if you got a year of Kittle with Mahomes, like, it could arguably be the greatest tight end season of all time. Like, if you got it where he ran, you know, routes on 650 dropbacks, like, it would be, like, I think he could have the greatest tight end season of all time. That's how much I think of Kittle. I would say with him, though, like, the volume, some of the injury concerns are there, where you don't necessarily know if you're ever going to get, like, a top 2 or 3 finish at tight end. So with him, one of the things that I would look to do is, you know, he's in a big group of guys that there's a lot of different profiles, right? He's very different than Ingram, but they score the same or similarly, right? So I would look to kind of try and, you know, take a guy in that range more so than necessarily pick a specific one, right? If I'm looking kind of in that Joku, Kittle, Ingram range, right? There's some other guys in there as well, right? Maybe I'm not necessarily prioritizing Kittle as number 1 in that tier, but I'm just going to take like the 3rd one off the board. That would be kind of the way I'd be thinking about it if I was drafting.
All right, and then one more question here before we get to the players that we're trying to trade for, and that's the Justin Fields problem. So the Bears pick a number 1 overall. Seems like they're leaning towards taking Caleb Williams. I know there's also been some talk that Washington or another team that they could put together a massive package, you know, try to get an offer out there that's going to pry that pick away. And I mean, Fields, he hasn't been perfect. You know, he's certainly had his moments for fantasy, though. He's had those week winning performances. So whether it's Chicago, whether it's somewhere else, he's going to be starting in 2024, and that means we got to figure out what to do with him for fantasy. So, Jordan, how are you approaching Fields right now, you know, as we get into what's going to be a really strange offseason for him, I would think?
Yeah, it's another strange offseason for him. It's a fascinating conversation because Chicago Bears fans will had their pitchforks out for me last year when I called into question some of the stuff about his ability as a passer. So that's, you know, I still have doubts, and if you're heading into year 4, as an NFL team and you have doubts about a player as a passer, I think that tells you the answer on whether or not he's your franchise quarterback. So I would expect them to draft a quarterback, would be my thought. And, you know, then I kind of wonder like where he ends up, right? You kind of put yourself on a Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold type trajectory. And are you going to get an option picked up? And you got like these problems with changing teams, it's a bad time to change teams contractually for these guys on rookie deals. I don't know where he goes that you feel great about it. Right? I think probably if he stayed with Chicago, that would be the best thing for his dynasty valuation, just, you know, on average. You could look at some different places where he could go. I think there's been some connections to Atlanta, for example. That would be interesting. I think a team like New England could also be interesting if they don't like where the quarterbacks are at. But I don't know there's a natural place you go where you're like, that's a huge uptick for him. So he's kind of put in this limbo spot from a dynasty perspective. That's not where I want my quarterbacks to be. And he's still trading at a value that I think you should be, hey, I need to move from question mark to certainty. And even if I need to attach picks to Fields, get to that spot of certainty, because I don't know what the next 6 months is going to bring. And I don't think it brings a ton of upside.
All right, so that means Fields is not somebody that you're probably trading for, but that brings us to the main event here. So honestly, every time we do a mailbag show and I throw out the ask for questions, I always get asked to name players to buy, players to stash for Dynasty, and I never really want to just like gloss over it in the mailbag because there's so many questions in there, I feel like people might miss it. So we did something, like I said, with you a couple years ago where we went over like 15 players, or it might even been more than that, that we were trying to acquire heading into the offseason. I think it's a super valuable thing to do for people. So let's do it again here. We're not going to go over 15. We'll go over a handful each, and we can go back and forth here, Jordan, because I want to name a few, but I'll let you start. So who's somebody that you're trying to acquire in Dynasty right now?
Geno Smith. And you look at any advanced metric on Geno Smith, it's better this past year than it was a year ago, right? So 2023 was better by almost every metric. You look at PFF grade, some of the PFF derivatives, like his big play rate was up, his turnover play rate was down. All of his metrics really stayed the same. A couple of things got worse. His drop rate doubled, and his basically what he did versus expectation went down, right? In terms of expected points in 2022, he had 17.6. This year it was 16.4. He did miss a game though with some injury stuff, which you could attribute some of that to, right? So if you kind of look, it's a pretty close in terms of that. But this year, on an expectation of 16.4 fantasy points per game, he scored 15.8. Last year, on an expectation of 17.6 fantasy points per game, he scored 19. So while it looks like, hey, it's a more than a 3-point drop in scoring, that's within the bands of what you would expect, like some natural variance to happen. I think he actually got better, performed worse, and that's actually a buying opportunity, because now you're buying much, much, much cheaper. I mean, he's going well into the 20s, and I would argue that he was better this year than he was in 2022. So I'm pretty encouraged by that. Again, you get another year of Jackson Smith and Jigba. You've got DK Metcalf. You've got Lockett. You're going to have a changing offensive scheme. We'll have to study that a little bit more, but I'm pretty encouraged by what I saw about Geno. I don't think he's a one-hit wonder. I think people are feeling that because he performed worse in fantasy, but I don't think that's true at all about how he produced.
I'm on board with you there that I think Geno is certainly a good one to go for. I had so many players come to mind when I was thinking of this, so I'm going to cheat a little bit, and I'm going to say a few teammates for my first one. And it's because there's a chance here that Mike Evans could leave the Bucs in free agency, and it's not for sure. He could get franchise tagged or something. They could end up bringing him back. But I wouldn't be surprised if he left this year. And in years past, I didn't think he was going to go anywhere. This time around, I think he could. And if he leaves, that would open up a bunch of opportunity in that Tampa offense. Chris Godwin's the obvious one. I still think he's an underrated player somehow. The guy's gone over 80 catches, over 1,000 yards in 4 of his last 5 years. He would have done it 5 straight years if it wasn't for injuries limiting him to 12 games in 2020. And remember, he suffered that ACL tear in there, wasn't the same the next season, still got there on volume. And yeah, it didn't look pretty each week, but he was still producing. So he's a heck of a player. I think he's due for a little touchdown regression. He's got 187 catches over the last 2 seasons, just 5 receiving touchdowns during that time. And if Evans leaves, Godwin can be the number one wideout in that offense. So he's somebody that I would send a late first for, maybe a package an early second and a player to try to get him, because Godwin, he's shown us that he can produce. Even if Evans sticks around, he can still do it for you. And I think his value could go way up if Evans leaves. And I mentioned his teammates being a part of this. So Trey Palmer's one. You know, he emerged as a number 3 wideout in Tampa this year. Didn't have a ton of big games, but he flashed a few times. He's got that incredible speed to beat you deep. He's got some grit to his game as well. And I think there's some star potential there. So if you can get him for like a 3rd-round rookie pick, I would. And then the Bucs tight end, Kate Otten. I'm going to include him here too. He had some moments during the season, but like Palmer, it's tough to get those, you know, consistent targets when you're playing next to Evans and Godwin. Still, Otten blew up in the playoffs. 8 for 89 in that win over the Eagles, 5 for 65 and a touchdown in the loss to the Lions. So maybe a little bit of a sign of things to come if Evans hits free agency, and Otten, another guy that you could just get so cheap right now. So it's not a major investment to add him. I don't know if you got thoughts on those guys, Jordan. If not, I mean, you can feel free to go into your next guy.
I'm just super curious about what happens with Mike Evans. Do you think Baker's back?
I do. I don't see how they don't bring him back. Like, they have to. It's just a matter of how much is it going to be now, and they're probably going to have to pay a decent contract for him, which seems crazy based on, you know, what where we would have been at the start of last year, but he pulled it off.
Yeah, I'm with you. My next one would be Jonathan Taylor, and I think when you look at Jonathan Taylor, right, there's a couple of things, general rules about running backs in Dynasty. People are scared of them because of the injuries and, you know, the short shelf life stuff. And the time to buy them is never at the top, right? You don't buy, you know, the worst time to ever buy Jonathan Taylor is when he finishes his running back one, right? That was when, you know, everyone was excited about him. Hey, he finished running back one, right? To finish his running back one, you need a couple of things to really go your way. Number one, you need to be extremely lucky from an injury perspective. And number two, like, everything needs to go right as, from a scoring perspective as well. So you needed both of those things to happen. You got both of them, and then you buy into that. That's the absolute worst time to buy into it. The best time to buy into it is when he's just been extended. He has only played 11 games and 10 games in the past two seasons. He's finished his running back 31 and then 33 in total points the last two seasons. And his price has dropped, right? That's the time you actually buy into a running back. By the way, from week seven on last year, 17.6 fantasy points per game. You remember he came back, got that little slow start because Zach Moss, again, he missed some time in the second half of the season as well. But right there, again, that's 0.2 of a point behind James Conner, who was running back six. So you're looking at a guy who basically played to a top six level this year once he came back. Again, that's an offense with Gardner Minshew that should get better when you get Anthony Richardson back, right? Again, I think this is a running back that could potentially be a top three finisher again in fantasy, and you're getting a big time discount on him. You know, he's going running back, you know, 5, 6, 7 in that type of range, and the marketplace, like, that's a really interesting opportunity to buy low on a guy. And you look at the guys that you are up above him, you're buying high on all of that, right? I'd much rather buy low. You insulate your risk. It's, you know, instead of paying a first round pick for Jonathan Taylor, or a first round pick for Bijan Robinson, you're paying a third round pick for Jonathan Taylor. There's an age gap there, obviously, but I would much rather kind of do that and be in the business of that depressed price guy, because that's when you can get your real, that's when running back can really pay off for you.
Yeah. And sometimes with these trades, part of it is, will the manager who has him actually give him up in a trade? And in this instance, they could be frustrated. You touched on it, right? The last couple of years with the injuries and stuff, they might feel like they've been disappointed by him enough and they're willing to move on from him. So I often see people throw out potential guys that you could go buy, and it's just like, there's no chance. I mean, on your show, you always talk about trying to go out and get a Josh Allen or a Patrick Mahomes, trying to get these elite quarterbacks. And how often in leagues are people actually willing to give those guys up, right? You have to give up just a monster package to even start that conversation. But with a guy like Taylor, I think he could be available this year. So he's not going to come cheap by any means, but somebody that, yes, I think his manager might be willing to move on from him this year. For my second one, guess what? I'm going to cheat again, and I'm going to mention a group of players. This time, it's not teammates, though. It's just going to be some, and I'm going the complete opposite end of things here. You went very, very high with Jonathan Taylor. I'm going a lot lower here to some cheap tight ends that I think you could stash or maybe trade for at a discount right now, because in my mind, they all have a path to potentially starting in 2024. And we've seen tight ends kind of come out of nowhere almost and produce like fantasy starters. And, you know, it's happened a few times recently, whether it's Jake Ferguson or Gerald Everett or Juwan Johnson. We've seen some of these guys emerge. And a couple of them, I mean, were just sitting on waiver wires in some of the shallower dynasty leagues that I was in. And if you go pick them up, you could potentially, you know, use them as starters, or what I've done normally is use them as trade chips once they get that value and once they start producing. So right now I'm looking at Brevin Jordan on the Texans, basically everybody that's been attached to CJ Stroud. I'm looking at you, like Noah Brown and Dalton Schultz. Like, these guys were putting up pretty good games, and I think a lot of that could be attributed just to the fact that they were playing with Stroud. And Schultz is a free agent this offseason. So Jordan, he made some noise, you know, when Schultz missed games last year. So I think he's a guy that you could look to. And once again, it's not guaranteed, but I'm going a little bit cheaper with things here. Cole Turner on the Commanders, somebody that I've personally liked for a bit. We might see Logan Thomas get cut. I think that would save Washington about $6 million, I think it was. So that's a possibility there. And then Davis Allen on the Rams. And I know he doesn't have the athletic profile that we would normally look for in a tight end, but Tyler Higbee just tore his ACL. Higbee's going to be 31 years old. You know, a tight end at 31 years old, we were just talking about some of those high-end guys that you love. Well, Higbee's not necessarily one of those high-end guys. He's coming off a late-season ACL tear. So will he be ready next year? Will they just decide to kind of move on from him? And Allen, he only had two games this year where he played more than 40% of the snaps. And in those games, he caught 8 of 9 targets, had 75 yards and a score over those two. So not huge stats, but if he's the starter in that Rams offense at the beginning of next year, there could be value there. And right now he's on most waiver wires. So he's another guy that I would stash. And I know that I'm digging deeper on these ones, but I want to have a little something for everybody in the show, right? So even if you're in that deeper league, you can't say that we didn't hit on somebody that you could consider there. So Jordan, I don't know what you think about those guys, but it's a different style of player to acquire, I guess.
Absolutely. I like that Cole Turner one, especially. I think that one could be interesting. And the changing, I always look to changing circumstances as well. Right, with coaching staffs, with different quarterbacks, like all of those things can shake loose for a player that you might be interested in, and you know that could potentially break his way as well.
All right, finish it off here, Jordan. Give us one more player to acquire.
So I'm gonna go the Justin Boone route and not give you a single player, give you a group of players, and it's not teammates this time. It is going to be a profile of wide receivers. So let's look at. Again, one of the things we talked about early on in the show is don't necessarily be rebuilding now. I think a corollary to that is if you have a ton of value that you're sinking into wide receivers, that can actually be a ceiling capping situation for you. And what will happen is a lot of times the value of young wide receivers will be higher than receivers that are actually going to be more productive because people are putting age insulation in there, right? So as a simple rule, at the same price, the wide receiver that has hit for a top 24 seasonal finish will outproduce the wide receiver at the same cost who has not finished with a top 24 seasonal finish. So, and it's actually a couple of rounds advantage to the guy that has the prior history of production, right? That's how much age insulation goes into these wide receivers. So I say all that, and you go and you look into the, let's just call it the wide receiver 3 range for a second here. You've got guys like Deebo Samuel, Amari Cooper, Cooper Kupp, Mike Evans, Keenan Allen, all between wide receiver 27 and 33 at Fantasy Cup. That is a place to live for your wide receivers. Again, you're not going to win any sort of beauty contest on Twitter in February with those guys on your roster, but you will win fantasy championships with those guys on your roster in December. And you want to be keeping your mind's eye on that as opposed to, you know, trying to play Dynasty Bikini.
Yeah, very, very smart call there, and something that I've heard you preach that before, and it's definitely something that I've followed suit on. I think that's a great call there. And like I said earlier, I mean, my list went on and on here. We could have spent a lot more time on this. You know, I think Bryce Young is worth thinking about. Dave Canales has done wonders with Geno Smith, who we talked about earlier, Baker Mayfield in the last couple of years, really helped rejuvenate those guys. Hopefully Young can have a second year step in the right direction, kind of like, I don't know, Trevor Lawrence did, right, after being in a bad situation during his rookie season. Kendre Miller, I think he's an interesting name in the Saints backfield. Alvin Kamara getting older. I'm not sure how much longer Kamara is going to be the guy in New Orleans, and Miller showed some juice on his touches this season. He dealt with a ton of injuries this year, so we really didn't get to see it from him, but he might be the future starter there, whether it's next year or the year after. And then Andre Yoshivash, the Bengals wideout, I think he's a candidate to replace T. Higgins if Higgins leaves in free agency. So he's another guy that you could have on your radar. But I'm going to call it there. We've mentioned a bunch. Like I said, we weren't going to go with 15, but we probably just mentioned over 15 there. That is all for today's show. So once more, go follow Jordan on Twitter at McNamara Dynasty. go check out all his work, especially analyticsdynasty.com. And Jordan, is there anything else that you want to add? Anything specific that maybe I didn't mention when we were going over all your stuff that you want to direct people towards?
No, you can find me on Twitter. That can be entertaining or frustrating depending on your perspective at any given time of year. Sometimes you find yourself as the windshield, sometimes you're the fly. So, you can find all my work over there, and then, you know, go to analyticsdynasty.com. I get the Dynasty Team Building Guide. I do daily podcasts here in the off season as well. So in the thick of it, always have you covered for Dynasty content.
Awesome. And always great talking to you, dude. As for me, I'll have my updated Dynasty Trade Value Charts out this week. And like I said off the top, I'll be back with another episode and another guest on Thursday. But until then, big thanks again to Jordan. Big thanks to everybody out there for listening. And we will see you next time.
Said leave on time. My baby said leave on time. Leave on time with me tonight.